Good afternoon, everyone. And this next webinar is on deposits and prescribed information. About 15 minutes or so, and there's a few questions at the end, but this is, if you've been on our webinars before, this is just purely the essential facts that anyone within the industry needs to know, whether you're a landlord, an accidental landlord, or part-time or full-time, or letting agents of any size or experience. Okay, we're working. Quick introduction for those that don't know us, that are new to this webinar and to ourselves. We are Legal for Landlords, and we're a complete provider for tenant referencing, insurances and legal services within the sector, dealing with both landlords and letting agents. So as I said, we're going to touch on deposits, look at the history in brief, the key facts, and obviously what happens next in terms of what our responsibilities are. Prescribed information, which surprising how many people still don't know about that, so we can come on to that as well. A quick summary, a Q&A, and a prize giveaway. So you'll notice on this webinar, compared to the other ones, we're going to start getting more involved with social media, so there's a little hashtag at the bottom there, the slides that you can see, LFL webinar, and the questions, you can ask questions as we go along, so you can either ask them within the forum section, and we'll answer them throughout the presentation or at the end. And you can also ask questions on social media as well. So we'll do our best to answer questions as we go along or at the end. Okay, in terms of brief history, in terms of tenancy deposits, basically it was introduced around 6th of April 2007 for any assured short-hold tenancy or otherwise known as ASTs, which majority of us know it by that. It was interesting because when he first came out, it was always that you had to be registered within 14 days, but the amount of court cases that then followed thereafter, some judges were accepting on 20 days, 21 days, 30 days, and the terminology became, it was such a grey area, so it was really an unknown period between those years of it rolling out until 2012, from our experience as well. And then potentially as a result of that, then it was changed to 30 days on the 6th of April, so it's 30 days on the receipt of the actual deposit. So you can move a tenancy in on the 1st of May 2015 and then you don't actually receive the deposit until the 14th. Then you'd have 30 days from the 14th then to register the deposit. It's not from when the tenancy starts, which still is a major confusion now. And then obviously since the Deregulation Act, which was what our last webinar was on, there's been further changes as well to deposits, which I'm sure you're all aware of. If there's anyone that needs any past webinars as well, just let us know and we'll send you a copy. Okay, so why, you're probably asking, in terms of deposits. Now, from my point of view, I was thinking that it's purely to raise the standards in the industry and to make sure that tenants were treated fairly, because obviously there's always a lot of bad press about landlords and agents and fees and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's a key point. However, I think the main driver was for it was that the tenancy deposits were actually being unfairly withheld at the end of tenancies, so that's where they're either rogue landlords or agents, or they can't really agree on anything in terms of maybe disrepair or damage, whatever it may be. There was always issues there, and I think it created a huge issue, hence the introduction of then free government-backed schemes as they stand at the moment. So I think there's a couple of other schemes as well, but the main three are My Deposits, Deposit Protection Scheme, and the Tenancy Deposit Scheme, so the My Deposits, the DPS, and the TDS. They're all really good. You know, we don't favour anyone in particular in terms of who we recommend our agents or landlord to refer to. They all pretty much do pretty much the same job. They have different rules and criteria as well, so two of them actually don't allow you to, you don't need to actually register any money to them in terms of transferring it. You can actually keep that money and get a certificate for that. And then one of them, the DPS, actually requires you to actually send the money over. Okay, so there's pros and cons. There's a few exceptions, which are very rare. We hardly come across any of these. So one, you're a resident landlord, as in you live in the property and then you rent a room out or rent a floor out to somebody. You wouldn't need to collect a deposit. Rental value is over $1,000 a year, which is obviously a high amount of per calendar month, which again wouldn't qualify for deposit. Student accommodation, obviously it's let directly by student universities or dorms, and company lets. There's no actual requirement by law to keep a company letter's deposit, and to be honest, it's a case-by-case scenario there as well. So a few key points just to recap then. So you have to register deposit within 30 days of receiving it in one of the three schemes. Deposits are generally 1 month's worth of rent as a minimum. I'd tweak that slightly actually. I'd say if you're in the M25, I'd say the general rule of thumb and consensus is 6 weeks deposit. Out of the M25, I'd probably say 4 weeks or at least 1 month is a general rule of thumb across the industry. It's probably unfair to class it the whole UK as one, whereas inside London is what happens in that rental market is very different to what happens outside of London. So 4 to 6 weeks. All deposits must be registered, even those taken prior to 2007. I know a few questions have came in about that already. So the Deregulation Act obviously covered that point. And worst case scenario, if you don't register your deposit within 30 days, then you may have to return it or face a fine of up to 3 times the rental amount. Now, we are aware of cases that the landlords have been fined. So I think it's... I don't think the perception is huge amongst tenants in the marketplace that obviously if the landlord doesn't register deposit, but there are tenants that are aware of it, so be very wary in terms of what you have to do and ensure that you follow the right procedures and processes. So I think that's fairly straightforward. Keep on firing the questions through. I'll try and go through them as many as possible. So just to further clarify, you can further offset the deposit against any arrears. If this is agreed and signed off by the tenant, don't do anything verbally, which is really key, because obviously it could be used as evidence in the future for any court cases. These are common questions that we've got. That's why we've related back to these ones. Oh, just 1 second, I'm back. If your tenant is in arrears and you want to serve a Section 8 and you haven't registered a deposit, then the risk of being fined is very high. So you have to basically register deposits before we even do any legal notices. That's our general rule of thumb, and obviously if you want to move on a Section 8 in arrears, if you want to offset it against it, you need it in writing, but then you can't go to, we'd say it's very high risk going to court, because then the judge could determine that you haven't registered a deposit, therefore your notice is invalid, you start again and you can potentially face a fine, so very high risk. And similarly, if you haven't registered a deposit, you cannot serve a Section 21. What you'd have to do instead is return that deposit to the tenant and then serve the Section 21 after that has been done as well, which sounds very strange when you're speaking to a landlord and they're either in huge rent arrears or they just want their property back and then they have to give the deposit back to the tenant because they haven't done something right in the first place. So we do have a lot of conflict about that on a daily basis, but the law is the law and we have to follow it and advise as best as possible. All right, moving on quickly to subscriber information. It's interesting how many people don't know about this still, but I think after today and the several hundred that are on this webinar now, they can be spread the word hopefully as well. So prescribed information is a typical, if anyone's dealt with solicitors, it's a typical information that is given to a tenant or a client beforehand, just basically listing all the information. So when a landlord or agent protects a tenant's deposit, it basically lists everything that they need in terms of the deposit. Simple as that. All the deposit schemes produce either a template that you can use for this, or it's a downloadable form which you can pre-fill in anyway. So a lot of the work's already done for you. It's just an extra document. It can form part of a tenancy agreement. It can be separate as well. And similarly, like deposits, that it has to be served within 30 days of receiving the deposit. And then there's plenty of opportunity given to check and sign this as well. With the Deregulation Act and the other changes, I think originally when prescribed information out, the tenant had to sign it or see proof of it, be part of the tenancy or separate. Now any party can sign it, the landlord or the agent can now sign prescribed information. However, what we say is for best practice, always ensure the tenants receive a copy and it's signed as well. And as you can imagine, it forms part of the tenancy deposit protection legislation as well, so deposits have to go in with PI. Both of these documents have to be served. Tenants have to have receipt and ideally signed by the tenant as well to ensure that you're fully protected in order to minimise your risk, worst case scenario, and I think that's the key thing here. Okay, prescribed information, I already touched on it quickly then. So there's templates and downloadable forms for prescribed information that the free SMAIN scheme providers provide. Pre-dereg, the tenant had to sign. Post-dereg, the landlord or agent can sign now, and obviously you have stated best practice. If you haven't followed the PI procedure, however, then very similar rules apply to deposits in terms of potential pitfalls and then starting again basically from scratch and returning deposits. And here's the worrying fact for us when I actually spoke to our in-house team here and asked them, just out of interest, you know, is this still a huge issue? Because it's been out for a couple of years now, and I didn't think it was such high figures, but they quoted to myself, and we deal with several hundred per month, but over 50% of landlords we deal with have never heard of prescribed information, and they've got no idea about it. And obviously these landlords may be the landlords that have managed it themselves, but then similarly, one in five agents that we deal with have no idea on prescribed information as well. I was surprised at one point for that, but then I think, you know, you run a business, you're being a landlord, whatever type of landlord you are, you've got to try your best to keep up to date with all the information within the sector, and obviously similar to agents as well. But I appreciate a lot of agents may not ever have any tenant issues, or they may have a couple that pop up, and it's just knowing what to do and how to best handle them in the right, basically just getting it right in the first place. Okay. So this is two huge things that everyone can take away from this today is register all your deposits within 30 days of receipt in one of the schemes, and that's imperative. You'd be very surprised now. I'll probably go and speak to the legal team, and they would have spoken to people today that haven't registered deposits because they didn't even know they had to. And then secondly, ensure that you serve prescribed information in the same period or as part of the tenancy agreement. So together or separate, but it doesn't really matter. And best practice, please do get the tenants to sign off on this. Okay, Q&A. I'm just going to go through a few questions now. Just pop up the box. I think I've answered quite a few of these during the webinar. Let's just take a couple here. I received a deposit, however, it was January 2007. I haven't registered at all. Can I now register it before serving my tenants with a Section 21 notice? And then, yeah, I think the answer is no to that one. So any deposits taken pre-2007, there was a release given that we've got basically a grace period up until June 2015 to register that deposit if you hadn't already. So that's plenty of time in that period to actually go back and do it, otherwise face the risk of facing a fine. So if you haven't done that, then you'd have to return the deposit before actually serving the notice and follow the steps that I mentioned before. Okay. My tenant has only paid me a half the deposit. Can I wait until the full amount has been received before registering it? No is the simple answer to that one. Any monies received need to be registered within 30 days of receiving it. So the deposit certificate would note that it's a part payment instead of a full payment. Therefore, you'd have to update the deposit scheme once you've actually received the full amount and to get your certificate amended to actually show it's a full payment. So yeah, ideally, register deposits whenever you receive them. Basically, you're minimizing risk here all the time, and then re-register the full amount in order to get your full certificate. Got time for a couple more questions. Let's look through a few others. My managing agent at the time registered a deposit on my behalf. They've now ceased trading, and I have no contact information. You know, this happens a lot. How do I obtain a copy of the certificate as I'm unsure as to who to deal with the deposit registered with? Yeah, obviously this does happen from time to time. What we would say, and it's just, again, it's best practice and common sense, really, contact all free deposit schemes in order to try and quote your reference details and obviously your number and obviously the agent in question. And then, therefore, if you can't find any evidence, an absolute worst-case scenario would advise you on returning the deposit and document everything as well. I think we've actually had a couple of scenarios like that over the last few years. So it does happen. So obviously you've got to be, at the end of the day, you know, being a landlord or being a managing agent, you are protecting the investment of yourself or somebody else. You follow the law, minimize your risk, maximize your return, and keep tenants happy, keep landlords happy, and that's what we're in it for. A couple more questions. I haven't registered my tenant's deposit, so obviously I need to return it to them. Could I just give them cash? So no, we don't advise cash at all, because as you can imagine, there's no paper trail. So the best way to return it is a form of the paper trail, so by box or check. So you can basically provide the proof and the receipt that, you know, worst case scenario, again, if it went to court. So if you were to return it, if we get it by a check, we advise taking a copy of the check as well and getting a signed receipt from the tenant if possible as well. One more question. I registered the deposit and provided PI to my tenant. However, they did not return the signed copy to me of the PI. Is it still valid? Yeah, really good question. I would say yes now. You don't necessarily require a signed copy of the PI back. However, should a possession hearing be made, then it would just you'd just be required to provide proof of service. Yeah, I didn't cover that in the slides. So you don't necessarily have to get a signature. You'll just need a backup of, obviously, a certificate of service in terms of a copy or a proof that it's actually being served. So actually, you know, it's basically going with somebody else as well and getting a signed document to prove that. Again, absolute worst case scenario. So as you can imagine, as being a landlord, there's lots of potential pitfalls that you need to be aware of, and hopefully we've covered them today. Quick question. I'm going to do something different on this webinar. I'm going to ask if anybody can reply back on social media instead of replying back to the webinar forum. So if anyone can reply back, and we'll keep it open for the next 30 minutes. So for the first 5 people to actually reply back to this question, what would you have to do if you haven't registered a deposit within 30 days? And quote the hashtag LFL webinar on Facebook or Twitter. For the first 5 that actually get the answers correct on that, once they've hashtagged us in on those 2 mediums, we will actually offer 2 things, a free case review, and secondly, a free of charge notice, whether it be a Section 8 or Section 21, to assist you with moving forward. And then you can actually keep that on file as well. If you haven't got anything immediately to do now, you can actually bank that as well, and you've got several 3 months to actually use that as well and take advantage of that. So any other questions, obviously feel free to let us know. We will respond back to all questions. There is, funny enough, there has been quite a lot in this. I didn't think there'd be that many, but we will answer all questions as per usual. And if there's anything else that we can help with, let us know. And please do feedback on this webinar. And yeah, any ideas or suggestions for the next webinar then, and keep us posted, because all these webinars are driven by you. So thanks for listening. Free advice number there as always. And thanks for your time.